Hello, this is James Stansel of the African American Studies Channel of the New Books Network. Today I have the pleasure of talking with Holly Charles, the author of Velvet. It's published by Author House. She is a Houston author, which is local for me. And, I met her out in the community, and I just had to get her in to talk with you all on the African American Studies Channel. So enjoy this interview. It's, you know, a bit history, it's a bit historical fiction, a bit memoir. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from Holly today. So sit back and listen and enjoy. Take care. James Stansel, African American Studies Channel, and the New Books Network. Hello, and welcome to the African American Studies Channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel, and I have the great pleasure of interviewing today someone that I've gotten to know pretty well here in recent history. She's a Houston person, and she's written a book called Velvet. Her name is Holly Charles. Holly, how are you today?
Just fine. Thank you for having me today. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We're sitting here for, depending on when you listen to this, it's MLK Day. And we're just chopping it up, having a good interview here on MLK Day. And I'm going to tell y'all, my wife is so excited about Holly's book. It's called Velvet, and it's published by Author House. And, you know, Holly, we're going to get into the book, and I think our listeners are really going to love hearing what you have to say about this book. You did some great research on it, and you and I have talked about it offline, and I was just so fired up. You know, I wanted to get you on the show to share your story and your research with our listeners. But before we get really kind of into the book, you know, let's just talk about you a little bit. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and, you know, how you, you know, where you come from, how you got to Houston, and, you know, where you went to school? Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so once again, thanks for having me. My name is Holly Charles. Mm-hmm. I'm the author of Velvet, and I grew up just outside of Chicago. In a city called Waukegan, actually. I usually just tell people I'm from Chicago because they're not used to. They don't know what that is. But I consider myself a Chicagoan.
Okay.
So I grew up there, and I was always into writing and music and literature, and it was just something that was a safe space for me. It was therapeutic for me. I never thought about doing it as a career or anything like that, and that proved to be true because once I went to college, I decided to go into television production.
Okay.
So I went to Purdue University, which is right outside of Chicago.
Boilermakers.
I am a Boilermaker. Yeah, I'm a Boilermaker. So I went to Purdue for telecommunication. Graduated in 2003 and was working in television for a short amount of time. And then during the show's hiatus, because I used to work for the Judge Mathis show, during that show's hiatus, I started selling just to do something, you know, make a little money on the side. And the very first class that I was put into was an English class. And it was one of the most amazing experiences. It was one of those, it was a God thing. It was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, it wasn't glamorous. It wasn't going to pay a whole lot, but it was home. It was comfortable and it felt like a calling of sorts. So at that point I went back to school, at least just to get my certification so that I could teach English.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I already had a minor in African-American studies.
Okay.
I already love for literature. So these things just started falling, you know, just kind of coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So once I graduated with my certification, I thought, okay, now where do I want to go in this country where I could actually, you know, make a little bit more money? And I just started doing my research on, you know, cost of living and you know, school systems. And Houston just sounded like a good place to try, you know.
Right.
So I came to Houston not knowing whether or not I would extend my 8-month lease. And here I am. Years later, 11 years later, here in Texas has been very good to me because this is where I got my master's from Prairie View A&M.
Ah.
Got my English master's, and that's what led to Velvet. After receiving my master's, or actually in the process of receiving my master's, I was working on independent study for 6 months.
Okay.
And trying to figure out, okay, what's worth 6 months of my life? You know, nobody wants to write about, you know, just anything. So I really started delving into the female lineage of my family.
Mm-hmm.
That was important to me. My history, obviously, you know, I had already, you know, like I said, had a minor in African-American studies. So my history was important to me as well. And during the course of those 6 months, I interviewed my grandmother, who at the time was 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she was candid. She was concise. She was gracious. And she gave me so much information about myself through mm-hmm. letting me know information about her. And so the story of Velvet actually begins in 1918
mm-hmm.
and comes to the present. And a lot of it is her accounts of what happened or what her mother told her okay. happened. So Velvet is told in vignettes. You might be in 1921, mm-hmm. and then it skips around. You might be in 1940, and you just see the development of the characters
mm-hmm.
From being a daughter to being a mother. And mm-hmm. you start to those complications between the two. So the name of the thesis originally was Velvet, The Burden of Melanin and Motherhood.
Ooh, The Burden of Melanin and Motherhood.
The Burden of Melanin and Motherhood. Mm. And I came up with that title because as I was writing, I realized how much womanhood is difficult in general.
Mm.
We understand that. But when you add race and societal pressure and status, and it's, you're at the bottom of so many different totem poles.
Right.
But you're also trying to instill values and a sense of worth into a daughter in a society that in some ways doesn't value women, doesn't value the poor, doesn't value Black women. And by God, don't let you be a dark-skinned Black woman.
Mm.
So I really feel like, you know, Black motherhood is one of the most difficult cultural genres
mm-hmm.
that any human being could understand.
Okay.
So I started to see those complications between mother and daughter. So I started to see those complications, with Velvet.
Mm-hmm. And we're here with Holly Charles, the author of Velvet on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. She is a Houstonian like myself. And so I'm really excited to have someone from Houston that I can interview locally. And so Holly would just tell us a little bit about her academic background. She's a graduate of Purdue University and Prairie View A&M. And you work locally here in the Houston area, correct?
I do, yes. I've been in education for 13 years. So when I moved to Houston to become an educator, that became, you know, that was really what I ended up, you know, mm-hmm. doing for, you know, for a long, it's been over a decade. So mm-hmm. been in education for a while. I love it.
Would you like to give a shout out to any of your students or family members or anyone that may be listening to this podcast today?
Oh, you know what? If I named one student, I'd have to name them all. So I won't do that. But what I will say is, before we go in more into
sure.
into the book, is that I am, first of all, appreciative that God, through these characters, made me a vessel so that other women could find healing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't write a self-help book. That's not what happened.
Mm.
But it helps people through just writing
mm-hmm.
real characters,
mm-hmm.
Through being honest,
mm.
Through being transparent.
Mm.
So what happens is when I do these literary talks, I'm reading excerpts. And then what happens is there's this true and honest dialogue mm-hmm. that happens in between. And women get to talk about what I call common tragedy.
Mm.
Sometimes we feel like, well, if everyone's had a miscarriage, you know, this is normal. This happens all the time. Or if many Black women grew up without their fathers. Oh, well, that just happens. And what happens is you see people kind of trying to push away common tragedies.
Common tragedies.
Mm. Yeah. And a tragedy is no less tragic because it's common.
Right. Well, good point. Absolutely.
So, you know, what happens is, I remember the first time I did an excerpt reading was before the book was even published.
Mm-hmm.
And I had about 40 women there. And I thought, you know what? These are just my friends and people that I know, colleagues. They'll be nice. They'll listen. You know, they may drop a few dollars in the hat because they know that this book, you know, that's really what I thought. And then I would continue for the next several months, you know, raising to publish my own book. And what was supposed to be an hour and a half on a Sunday afternoon turned into 4 hours of women weeping and sobbing
wow.
and admitting to attempting suicide and admitting to self-sabotaging mm. relationships. And we had to shut it down. I remember saying, you know, we've got to give up this space. You know, we've been here for 4 hours and we can't do this. And the women lingered and they just said to me, you know, I've never had a chance to talk about this.
To tell their story.
To tell their story, or to say simply, this hurt me, or this is difficult. Because how dare you complain when there are so many others who can do the same?
Right.
And I think that we push that to the back as Black people. And then when you add, you know, being a woman on top of that, you know, a lot of times we are oppressed by society. But then you also have to think, because we are technically, you know, I'm doing air quotes, you know, the weaker sex. We are a lot of times forgotten in many ways and just expected to be strong, but then told we're wrong for being strong at the same time. It's this cultural genre of being a Black woman, not even just an African woman or a woman of color, but being a Black African-American woman is very difficult. It's challenging. And how do you raise children and other daughters in the middle of that without harming them? And that's a paradox. You know, it's a paradoxical situation. I was when I was doing my research, and I kind of set some notes out here, because there isn't very much research on Black women and Black mothers. There really isn't. I had a tough time finding things. But I came across a poem by Margaret Burrow called What Shall I Tell My Children Who Are Black?
Okay. Margaret, and for the listeners.
Margaret Burrow. Margaret Burrow.
And what was the title?
What Shall I Tell My Children Who Are Black?
Okay, go ahead.
And this just, it really just encompassed exactly what I was feeling and my fears of becoming a mother one day. And then kind of this realization of how difficult it is for mother and the women that came before us and some of the characters in the book. But the poem says, what shall I tell my children who are Black of what it means to be a captive in this dark skin? What shall I tell my dear one, fruit of my womb, of how beautiful they are, when everywhere they turn, they are faced with abhorrence of everything that is Black? What can I say, therefore, when my child comes home in tears because a playmate has called her Black, big-lipped, flat-nosed, and nappy-headed? What will she think when I dry her tears and whisper, yes, that's true, but no less beautiful and dear? I think that, yes, it's very powerful. And I think that we take for granted how difficult it is to raise beautiful, strong, independent, you know, women, secure women in a society that says that what you are is less than. So a lot of times what mothers do is they mother based off of their fears and experiences. I mean, that's all that you have.
That's what you know, right?
And that's what you're doing as a father, right? So a lot of times what a mother will pass down is not necessarily that last line, you know, you're beautiful and dear, but a lot of times you're trying to instill in them what the world is going to think so that they are not disappointed. So you end up sometimes placing these misshapen truths into your child.
Okay.
Because you're telling them the truth of what your life has been. And it can become a hindrance.
And I'm here with Holly Charles, the African American Studies Channel, the New Books Network, and we're talking about her outstanding book, Velvet. It's published by Author House. If you can go to our blog page, you'll be able to click right through and get it from Amazon.com. And hey, if you're lucky, Holly may be coming to your town. She mentioned she does literary talks, you know, often in the Houston area, but often other places around the country as well. And so she's been telling us a little bit about her background, and she's been telling us a little bit about some of her inspirations and, you know, and places where she got her ideations for Velvet. And so let's kind of get into the book a little bit, Holly. I mean, you know, we've talked about this offline, but I really want the audience to understand, you know, the story and you know, the type of research that you did, which is, to me, is fascinating, you know, to be able to put these things, you know, together.
Yes. So for me, you know how you said it was fascinating listening. Imagine I would be on the edge of my seat, literally talking to my grandma. You know, I was on the edge of my seat listening. And it's not as though you don't know that racism exists. We know, you know, the residual of slavery. We know what it's like to be a woman. But there's something different when you hear the story individually.
Firsthand.
Right. And not just some psychological, you know, journal that tells us how we should have or must
race
have.
Race memory.
Right. But when you hear, okay, well, this is your great-great-grandmother. Okay, well, that's kind of where I started, actually, is with my great-grandmother. So the first character that we meet in the book is named Ludie, mm-hmm. who was a very, very dark woman who was told very early that she was too dark to ever be considered pretty. Mm-hmm. So what does a child do? What does a child, what happens to the mind of a woman who is told very early on not to have expectations about having any real romantic interest from a man?
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Okay. And you have to think that a mother is the leading authority on everything that is womanhood. You know, when you're if you're 2 years old and you look up at the sky and you say, what color is that? And they say, that's pink. What reason do you have to question it?
You don't.
This is, you know, you're teaching me everything. I have no reason to question what you're saying. I may not like it. I may feel some sort of way about it, but there's Virginia R. Harris. She has this theory called a prison of color.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice Walker, the author of The Color Purple, she actually talks about how difficult it is to not be a black woman, but to be the black woman, right?
The black woman.
Okay, because that's a different story. Mm-hmm. That's different than what some people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. So Ludie, this character in the book, was a black woman in a prison of color.
Mm-hmm.
And what she did was she built these walls around herself to protect herself. She never, you know, so she almost was this asexual character.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the book, who never really believed that she was beautiful enough to do anything, like have a marriage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she accepted the truth for what it was. But what is the truth? And that's where, when I do these literary talks, we talk about, well, what is the truth? Because mm-hmm. when you look at mom and you're upset about what she taught you, that was her truth.
Mm-hmm.
So for the black woman growing up in Texas, okay. And everyone kind of confirming this negative energy for her,
mm-hmm.
that she was too dark to be pretty.
Mm.
She shaped her entire life around that. And then when she has a daughter, what do you think happens?
Yeah, she's going to teach her the same way.
You pass down the same exact thing, you know. So I think that I'm looking at some of my research here.
Mm-hmm.
I brought my thesis out. Patricia Collins. She made a comment. She said, mothers may have ensured their daughter's physical survival at the high cost of their emotional destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that so much where a mother is just trying to give you what we call the real. Let me tell you what life is. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you that men cheat. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you that you don't want to stay in the sun too long because of the
complexion. Right.
Yes. Let me tell you, you know, let me tell you that, you know, how to marry for convenience instead of for love. Oh. I'm telling you things based off of my life, my truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes very, very, it becomes a tricky thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that causes a tug of war between mothers and daughters. And I have these literary talks a lot of times as healing. There's no division that Velvet is supposed to create. It's supposed to bring together.
Right.
Velvet is about having compassion for both women. It's hard to be someone's daughter when you have a mother.
Mm-hmm.
But those two things, once again, we have a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a woman saying, this is what being a woman is. I am telling you the truth. And then you have a woman who's walking through life in a different stage with a different set of dreams and hopes and desires. And she still
mm-hmm.
needs to kind of add up to what her mother said womanhood is.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, once we zoom through the 20s and 40s and 50s and we mm-hmm. see these other characters struggle with their relationship with their mothers, as I'm writing it, I was having some discussions with my mother that were a little
mm-hmm.
topsy-turvy. And a lot of that had to do not with colorism, not with sexuality or anything like that. My issue was more with, you know, my evolving views of what being a woman was,
mm-hmm.
you know. So you have to think, my mother got married at 17 or 18, you know,
okay.
to a Navy man and, you know, had two children and, you know, and her mother was a stay-at-home mom, was a domestic worker,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then there's me. You know, then there's me. You know, I have a totally, the world around me has changed. I'm 35. I've never been married. I don't have children.
Mm-hmm.
What she is telling me being a woman is totally different than what I think being a woman is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Your life experience.
Yes, my life experiences and even my expectations from a man.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chapter in the book called My Mother's Wedding Dress, mm-hmm. where I was struggling with whether or not to get married. I was in a relationship with someone who probably, you know, I'm sure, you know, he's a great person, but wasn't the person for me. And we had already, I already knew that there was some infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was always taught from my mother and what she was taught from her mother, mm-hmm. you know, here we go with the generational curses there, is that a man is going to cheat, but a man that loves you will be discreet. And that was kind of like this rhyme that always taught me.
A man is going to cheat, but a man who loves you will be discreet.
Absolutely. So it was,
wow.
And this is the thing. These are whispered conversations between mother mm-hmm. and mother. This is not my mother out in the world saying
right.
this as an open declaration. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This was her sharing what I call a spiritual heirloom with me.
Oh, yes. Spiritual heirloom.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was not, you know, now up until writing the book, I may have even looked at it like, how dare her tell me something like that? Or, you know, I could have looked at that as her being weak or having low self-esteem herself. I could have looked at that and been upset that she would tell me to allow that in my life. But when after doing the research and really looking at it, my mother loves me. My mother is an amazing woman. Mm-hmm. I understand that. What she did was she mothered me based on her fears and experiences. Her telling me that was an attempt to save me some distress of thinking that mm-hmm. that was about me, that a man doing that was trying to hurt, or that it had, mm-hmm. it was a reflection of how beautiful I was or how mm-hmm. strong I was. She was telling me that to protect me more than she was to hurt me. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I don't think there was no hurt.
No, she wasn't trying to hurt you.
She
was letting you know how things were from her perspective.
From her perspective. And from her perspective, that was the absolute truth. And it wasn't until I'm literally at the computer every night typing and I'm having to write portions of her story that I'm realizing, oh, my God, now I'm thinking that I'm writing this book about women, you know, and then mm-hmm. when I get to writing my own portion, I remember there was a point where I couldn't see the screen for the tears because I started, you know, as I'm writing about, you know, my own father's infidelity, I'm writing about, you know, some of the other personal things that my mother has shared with me about her
marriage. Sure, sure, sure.
I'm writing about her miscarriages. I'm writing about, you know, and it's not until then I'm thinking, okay, this was my mistake. Why have I had any type of resentment or ill feelings about what my mom taught me? This is the truth.
Mm.
It may not be mine. It's the absolute truth.
But it's her truth.
And this is where, and this is what I like for people to understand. We have a responsibility as grown women, as human beings, because this is something that even you can take away.
Mm-hmm.
To be compassionate to the people who are closest to us. We can be compassionate when we watch a movie on TV and say, well, there's a reason why this, I can watch A Time to Kill and say, well, I understand why it killed him. You know, I can understand why he killed, but look at the story behind it.
Right.
And then we sit here with people every single day and we ignore their story. I had been treating my mother like she was born in 1981 with me, like that's when her life began. And it didn't.
She had a whole full one before you got there.
Oh, she had had so many disappointments and so many, you know, victories as well. But she had had a whirlwind of experiences. And then she also had some that were passed down to her from her own mother.
Mm-hmm.
How dare I invalidate what she said? Now, what I had to learn, the tricky part, was that it didn't mean that I had to accept what she said for me. But it does mean that I should be compassionate towards her.
Mm-hmm.
It does mean that I shouldn't look at it as though she does not care for me.
Mm-hmm.
It does mean that I am a woman, too, and I can tell her that I am building my own fears and experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very intellectual conversation that lots of us don't get a chance to have with
ourselves. So you can acknowledge her truth without internalizing it and making it your truth.
Absolutely. And it just absolutely cannot be. And I think that even when my mom read the book, I'm not sure that she and I just sat down and talked the way that you and I are, where we have to say, well, what is your truth, mother? I'm not sure that happened. But there were these moments where, because my mother, she's super supportive of everything that I do. So when I remember writing that chapter, when I finally got to the point where I was writing about her and I sent it to her, super nervous, sweating bullets, wondering, was she going to feel disrespected, you know, or because I wanted, at the end of the day, I wanted her to know I loved her and I wasn't upset with her. I didn't start writing the book from a place of anger. So I didn't want her to, by me telling the truth, I didn't want her to misinterpret what I was saying. And the most telling thing that she said to me one day, when I asked her, I said, how do you feel? And she was quiet for a while. And I said, just tell me, you know, do you want me to take it out? What do you, how do you feel? And I remember her just saying, I just didn't see myself that way.
Wow.
And that is not an admission of guilt, because there's nothing to be guilty for. You know what I'm saying? That's not an admission of guilt. It wasn't her being angry or mean or whatever the case may be. But when she sees it on paper, too, then she's listening to a woman narrate her own story. So she saw me as a woman at the same time I saw her as a woman. And that, I think that solidified our respect for one another. And that doesn't mean that everything is perfect. She's still my mother and I'm still her daughter. And that's a complicated relationship forever. Forever. Woman of every race.
And you know, thank you so much for sharing that story, Holly. We're here with Holly Charles, the author of Velvet. You can find this book through Author House on Amazon. This is James Stanford with the New Books Network, the African American Studies Channel, and I'm here just kind of like we're just sitting around at the coffee shop or at the Smoothie King or whatever the case may be, talking about Holly's book. If you're ever in the Houston area, definitely check her out. You know, her work, she's pretty well known for some of the things. And we're going to talk about some of the local issues and things that you're involved with a little bit later in the interview as well. But, you know, we're talking today about her book, Velvet, And it's a, you know, it's a very personal story. It's vignettes, some historical fiction there. But, you know, one of the things that really got me interested and excited, you know, me about your work is when you told me about, you know, you came from Illinois, you came to Houston, and you didn't even know some of the personal connections that you had. With Texas, and in researching some of these, the people and the characters in the book, you know, we talked offline about how you were in, you know, in parts of, I think it was like Eastern Texas, parts of Texas there, and you know, and you were just learning the stories of your family members, and even though everything in here, you know, and just for the record, you know, everything in here is not just exactly as it happened, but even if it's not the story of Holly Charles's family, it's someone's family story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which makes this really interesting as well. So let's just talk about that a little bit. You know, for those people who may be interested in, like you said, you know, maybe finding their family stories and talking about those things. You know, what kind of methods did you undertake, or, you know, what kind of guided your research? Where did you go? What did you do? And what were some of the revelations?
Well, don't ever discount oral history. A lot of times people feel like, you know, The difficult part about African Americans trying to research their own history is that there aren't records.
Right.
It's unfortunate. I mean, you know, the bottom line is we don't know. Most of us don't know what part of Africa we're from.
Right.
Most of us don't have the correct names, or there are no last names. There aren't documents.
Right.
There aren't legacies and all of this to pass down. That's just the truth, you know. And I think we try to pretend like slavery happened so long ago. It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long ago. So you don't get to be 130 years out and then say that, okay, now we have a history. 130 years does not scratch the surface. So for us, at this moment, African Americans will have to rely on oral history. Mm-hmm. So I started there with I talked to my grandmother all the time anyway, just because I'm close with her. But it became like, okay, nah, grandma, now look, this is business, so I'm calling you. And we're going to spend, and I wouldn't tell her how much time we would spend. I would just say, this is what we're going to talk about today.
Right.
And thank God I have a grandmother who is like, who's candid and who wanted to do this for me, because she didn't have she didn't have to.
And it was a blessing that you were able to talk with her and have those conversations before she wasn't able to really fully have those conversations anymore.
Yes. And now,
and that's
her
key.
Her memory began fading. I remember writing the thesis and graduating at the end of the 6 months, and she flew out. She was here. She was, you know, great. And she still is, you know, she still is well. But her memory is not what it was, you know, early stages of dementia kind of stepped in. Probably by the time I did my first literary talk, I remembered seeing the signs and I was confused, you know. And I thought, man, you know, once again, I'm grateful that God chose that moment and even chose me to be able to tell the story that it could help other people. So,
because sometimes many of us, we can wait too late to have those conversations, you know. And so all of you listening out there, if you know, if you want to learn more about your family history, like Holly's saying here, you got to talk to those relatives. Maybe get them to write it down, record them. We all have cell phones now. Record it on your cell phone before it's too late. Or we could lose those stories.
Yeah, you'll lose those forever. And you'd be surprised how much they remember. You really would. But those things that are most important to them stick in their minds. Now, I'll say this. It wasn't that I didn't trust my grandmother's word, but I knew that when I started writing the book, I want it to be as historically accurate as possible.
Absolutely. As a scholar, right?
Right. And I mean, the thing is, I was writing it as fiction, so I knew I could make things up. But you know what? The truth is so much better than, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Fiction. Always.
So, of course, I had to embellish certain things. I wasn't there in 1920. Do you know what I'm saying? So when I say embellish, the main facts of the story, everything in that book actually happened. I was not there for a conversation. So those things, of course, had to be imagined and summed up in some sort of way. But I spoke with this woman, and she talked about things that I knew. Probably sometimes I would feel guilty getting off the phone with her at night. I remember when we got to the chapter where we talked about the death of my aunt, who died as a little girl.
Okay.
And my grandmother actually witnessed it. I remember saving that question, saving that part until the end. I just didn't want to. I felt like I didn't want to, you know, she lives in Indiana. I felt like I didn't want to talk to her about that and then send her off to bed and say, okay, good night. You know, but she was strong. And maybe in some ways she needed to tell the story one last time. I don't know. I'm not sure how much she's revisited it. I really don't know. But she told me all of these things, and it just, I would go back and I would say, okay, let me make sure that this is right. And sure enough, I would find research and I would find cities where this took place. And, you know, the railroad where we start the book off was the Sabine Galveston Railroad. And that's where.
Right here in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found out while in Texas that I'm from Texas. You know, that people are from. I had no idea. I didn't move here because of those reasons. It, you know, there's kind of a disconnect with families. So I didn't really know exactly what was going on, you know, until I'm looking at where the trains went through. And I'm looking at certain cities and I'm thinking, oh, man, OK, Marshall and Carthage. And I made it as accurate as it could have been, could be.
Wow. So we're here with Holly Charles. She's talking about her book, Velvet. Published by Author House. You can get it from Amazon.com. Just click through on our New Books Network page or look up her name yourself. You know, we're having a good conversation about her experiences as a writer and a scholar. And when you get a chance to look and see the cover of this book, it's very beautiful. And if you see Holly, she's very beautiful also, and you'll see some connections. You know, I'm looking at the picture here, and I see Holly, right? You know, I see Holly from a long time ago.
Yeah.
So could we talk about the cover a little bit, Holly?
Yes. So first off, and I said this to you offline, I am very protective of telling who's on the cover, you know, because it's just because she's one of, it really is one of the characters from the book. When I was having all these conversations with my grandmother, she was getting kind of excited, you know, two or three months in.
Right.
It becomes, I think she was happy to be able to, that, you know, she has her granddaughter asking her all these questions. So it became fun at some point. And she would just, I remember her sending me like this envelope. She sent me in the mail a bunch of pictures. And one was a little tiny tattered picture. It was the one picture of one of the particular characters in the book. I'll just say that she's a character that passes away early. So you can make that connection when you read Velvet. But she sent me this picture. It was tattered. And I thought, well, man, what can I do with this? But there was something in her eyes. There was something soulful. There was something. I see all the women in this book as being just regal and regal and almost forgotten. You know, most of the women in the book are domestic workers. But I just saw this pride. I just saw something beautiful in her eyes, but not necessarily beauty in the way that we see it, but just in her experience, I felt like you could see it through the picture. So when I did my first excerpt reading, when I was still trying to publish the book, there was an artist there by the name of Sophia McConan. She's from Houston. Sophia McConan is a beautiful person. Inside and out, she is Eritrean. Her family is from Eritrea.
Okay.
And she does this beautiful artwork all the time. And a lot of times she incorporates her own, you know, African history into it and culture. And her mother taught her very early beadwork.
Ah, okay.
So I remember she said to me at the end of the excerpt reading, at the end of that 4 hours that I talked about, she came up to me and she said, "I don't know what you need from me," she said, "but I just want to be a part of it." She said, "I will do the cover and I don't want to charge you." And it was like, how does this even happen? You know, like, I mean, I didn't even know how to respond to it. And I was so, of course, I'm super grateful. And she just said, "I just want to be a part of it." And so we had this meeting. We sit at her house and we have like dinner and we talk for hours. And she's just looking at this one picture and she's like, "Well, what do you want people to feel when they speak it?" And the word regal and royal just kept coming up, you know, because that's what Black women are. And not from the standpoint of money, because, you know, royalty has nothing to do with that, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It has to do with legacy. And when I see these strong women, it just made me think of the word regal. And so she looked at the picture and she said, "I think I can blow this up." She said, "I think I can make it bigger. And I think I can." And she started going through these ideas. And that's exactly what she did was, She blew the picture up.
Right.
She hand beaded like every single bead on top of the picture. And she hand sewed lace. So the picture, the actual picture is. Matter of fact, I guess I can show you. The picture is much more plain and I have it up in my home.
Well, unfortunately, you guys can't see this.
Yeah. I'm showing you. So it's it's much plainer of a picture. So she just blew it up and made it look regal. And it was just by placing these things on it. And I have lots of people who stop me and they're like, "Where'd this cover come from?"
Yeah. You know? It's very beautiful.
Yeah. It's haunting.
So please give her my regards.
Yeah.
And mention her name again so people can know the artist.
Yes. Her name is Sophia McConan.
Okay. Can you spell the last name?
Yes. McConan.
Okay. And so if the listening audience wants to look her up, she's a Houston area person.
She is. I think if you Google her, you'd probably find some things or even follow her on Instagram to see some of her work.
Right. And she did an outstanding job on the cover of this
she
book.
She did.
Very, very attractive. So you all will see it, you know, when you go to purchase Velvet. You'll see the cover. It's a very beautiful cover. And when you look at the author, Holly Charles, you'll see some connections. And I guess we can leave it to them after they read it to see if they can figure out which character
I think I think people read it and they go back and forth and try to figure out who it
try
is.
To figure
and
out.
Yeah, they try to figure it out.
Now, if they contact you directly, will you give them the answer if they're correct or not, or are you just going to always keep it to yourself?
No. I've done book talks where, you know, where there was an actual book club where they've read the whole book.
Right.
And they're like, "Oh, you know," there's always half the women like, "That's who I thought it was," or "No, I thought it was." So I kind of like that element of surprise. But yeah, after people read the book, of course, I'll tell them.
All right.
Yeah.
So you guys can, and fellas and fellettes, y'all can get in contact with Holly directly. And she said that she'll tell you, she may tell you who the person is. And so it sounds like, Holly, you are open to, you know, like a lot of the authors we interview here on New Books Network, you're open to talking to people who read your book and engaging in scholarly, you know, conversation. So definitely, we encourage them to get in contact with you.
Yeah, the book is not about me. Otherwise, I wouldn't even do the literary talks. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I would be on to writing another book, but it's been 3 years of me going around and speaking to various groups and women and men as well. Quite honest with you.
Definitely important for men as well.
Yes, because I can only tell the story from the point of view of a Black woman because that's what I am. but everyone can find something in this. There have been so many men who've come to me, kind of lingered afterwards because they didn't want to admit that this, you know, and, you know, kind of touched them.
Right.
And then they tell me their personal story about their relationship with their father and how, you know, they feel like they've been hindered by their father's experience, or that they don't feel like their fathers are trusting them with their own manhood.
Mm.
You know,
wow.
So we see that that's what love is. It is hampering sometimes. Mm. It really, really is. And one of the things I put in my research, and I'm looking down again, although a mother's struggle for control is oppressive, her knack for love is freeing. And the love relationship is oxymoronic. In one instance, the daughter emulating her mother, and in the next instance, breaking free of her mother's expectations. So it's a constant struggle of, I want to be just like you, and I want to be myself.
Mm-hmm.
That is complicated.
Right. So this is something, even though it's about your family experiences, you know, as a woman, men can read this and get something themselves.
Oh, 100%.
You know, like, and maybe it can help them get closer to their fathers or their mothers and those experiences.
Yeah.
And so fellas, if you're out there, you're listening, you're like, oh, well, that ain't for me. That's for the ladies. No. It can be for you as well.
Yeah. And right. It'll help you to, I think it's important for men because I think it's important for you to understand your daughters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And then. It's important for you to understand how I keep saying over and over again, a mother's based off of her fears and her experiences, but that's what you do too, daddy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You're doing that. So I want everybody to be more conscious of the conversations that they're having with their children.
Right.
You know, I always give the example that if you walk through a doorway and you fall and you break your leg and you're hurt for weeks and you're out of work and you miss pay and the rent is due. And okay, so you've had all these terrible things that have happened as a result of you falling when you walk through that doorway.
Right.
When you see your child approaching that door, what do you tell them to do?
Mm-hmm.
You say, use the back door. Don't go through doors. Hold on to the edge when you come in. Matter of fact, come in through windows from here on out.
Right.
You know, you do that because you love them. Not because you're saying you're not smart enough to walk through, but sometimes we take it that way.
Right.
Okay.
That could be how it's interpreted.
Right. Mm. Right. But this is somebody who's saying, I was hurt when that happened to me. But this is what a parent, mother or father, needs to consider. That child may just have better grip on his shoes.
Mm.
And
say that one more time.
That child may have better grip on his shoes. Or
better prepared for that situation than you were as a parent.
Exactly. Or the times may have changed.
And times change, right.
So if the times change, what I'm saying is, was it raining that day?
Mm-hmm.
Is it dry now?
Mm-hmm.
So then we have to look at the time periods. What, you know, what being a woman to my mother was in the 70s is totally different than what I think it is right now. So when the times have changed, just like with that doorway, was it well lit? Was it? There were circumstances behind your fall that have nothing to do with your child when they try to come through it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to consider those things. And most importantly, you have to consider the fact that your child may not be afraid to fall.
Mm-hmm.
That's you that was hurt by that. But we are different. We are shaped by our experiences. You know, when we come out of the womb, now we have a different set of circumstances around us who make us who we are. We have, you know, we look different. We are different. We think different.
Right.
So we have to consider all of those things. When I become a mother, I'm going to give myself a break. I understand that I won't be perfect because I can only do it based off my fears and experiences.
Right. Sure.
I'm hoping that since I've been running around telling this story that I'll be able to, you know, to take a step back, though.
Right.
Every now and then, when I see that there is a tug of war, when I see us kind of bumping heads,
mm-hmm.
hoping that I can think back and say, wait a minute. Is this about me or is this about her?
So try to break some of these generational curses that I know you talk about a lot in your talks, right?
Uh-huh. Because the thing is, a lot of times, you know, we don't know it's a generational curse because we may not consider it a curse. I just told you that my mother, if she considered that a spiritual heirloom, and I considered it a curse. Once again, our truths are different. So you have to really think. Am I telling her this because of me?
Mm-hmm.
Am I instilling this in her because of my past?
Right. Mm.
So you have wow. you have to be able to distinguish those two things, and there is no perfect there's no perfect science to that. Mm-hmm. Because in some instances, yeah, you do need to instill some of those things into your child, but sometimes you have to there are things I think that maybe that my mom talked to me about that weren't in alignment with my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, you know, you become a woman, a grown woman. There's, mm-hmm. there's a feeling in your gut that not that it's wrong, but that it doesn't fit me. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? That mm-hmm. So it wasn't about me criticizing mama, but it didn't fit who I was. So
right.
that chapter, my mother's wedding dress is an entire metaphor. You know, Velvet's chapter, that chapter, my mother's wedding dress, it's all a metaphor. The wedding dress, there was a time where I was going to get married and I wanted to take her dress. I was just thinking, I'll just.
Right, you mentioned that to us before, right?
Yeah.
With that man that had a little infidelity.
Right. So I said, okay, I'm going to take her dress and I'm going to go ahead and get married and get this thing over with. You know, there's no sense being the girlfriend of a man who cheats. You might as well be his wife, you know. So I went ahead and I thought, let me go ahead and do this. And then, you know, if you read the book, you'll see there's a moment of clarity where I realized how much I didn't like that dress. The dress the dress didn't fit me. The dress didn't look to me like it was even the same color that it did in the pictures that I saw years before.
Oh.
It smelled when I put it on. It itched. I had to change the shape of it in order to fit my body correctly. It was outdated. And this is the thing. It wasn't the dress that I wanted. It was just the dress I had. And how many of us are running around in a dress that we don't want?
Doesn't fit us.
Yeah.
That's something powerful to think about there. And, you know, we're here with the author of Velvet, Holly Charles. The publisher is Arthur House, Houston area writer, scholar, researcher. And, you know, some of the listeners here, and I mentioned this before, you do literary talks. They may be really excited about getting you to come to their town, Holly.
Yeah.
Would you be willing? Yeah. To do
100%.
Book discussions and such.
Yeah, of course. I will tell people they can contact me by emailing hollycharlesbookings@gmail.com. But I'll be honest with you, you know, the quickest way, and when I've done radio or TV or whatever the case, when people have get in contact with me, they've done it through social media because it's so quick and it's easier. Right now, you may already have forgotten, well, what was that email and how do I, I didn't write it down. And, you know, so if you're in your car right now and you're thinking, I would love to have her come out for a symposium or have her as a guest or a keynote speaker for an empowerment summit or something like that.
Right.
My name is Holly Charles. Find me on Facebook. Send me a message. You know, that's the easiest way to get to me. Even on Instagram, I've had people contact me there as well.
Soon to be LinkedIn.
Yes. You got on me about that. I haven't done that. I think I've been moving too fast. I've been moving too fast, and I need to slow down a little bit to do that as well.
And they can click on, they can go to our New Books Network page, the African American Studies channel. And they can click on the link. We're going to have a link right to your webpage up there as well.
Perfect.
And so they can contact you that way. And again, the author is Holly Charles. The book is Velvet. It's a beautiful cover. If you didn't hear earlier, she told us the story about, how that cover was developed. And you can try to solve the mystery as you read as to the person on the cover. And Holly's also, involved here heavily in the Houston area as well. And, you know, we don't want to keep her all day long. We're having a great talk, Holly. You know, we just talked about this before. We could talk all day long, you know, about these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But why don't you share with the audience some of the other things you're involved with. You know, you have a play that you've written that's going to be coming up soon here in Houston, and maybe some other things you're involved with.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I'll say that this book, it led to several panels and literary book signings, and it kind of spiraled out of control in a good way. Right? And then I ended up being nominated to be a member of the Houston Black Leadership Institute.
Oh, right.
2014, which was an honor, a blessing, and honestly, it changed my life. So it put me in certain circles where I could continue to be a vessel of hope for women.
Absolutely.
So during that time, though, we had, you know, during my institute days, we had a class day and where we learned about the history of Houston. And I was floored when I found out the history of Freedmanstown, which is right here in Houston. It's an enslaved, one of the one of the largest ex-slave settlements in the entire United States. It's like it's a jewel. It is sacred space. And even people in Houston aren't necessarily informed about it.
No, they're not.
And and because of gentrification, we now have this new area in Houston. You know, how do you have a new area in the middle of downtown, right? But we have a new area.
Change the name.
Right. That is now considered Midtown. But we've completely forgotten about the fact that there's a National Register Historic District called Freedman's Town. Mm-hmm. And what once was over 568 structures is now down to maybe less than 10. Mm. And only one functioning facility out of that, and that would be the Rutherford B. H. Yeats Museum, which is the home of Rutherford B. H. Yeates, who was a trailblazer. He was a printer in this thriving society of ex-slaves who were doctors and lawyers and craftsmen and ministers. And
this is a museum people can actually go and visit themselves.
You can go in yourself, yes, at 1314 Andrews in Houston.
Okay. And so Rutherford
B. H. Yeats.
Rutherford B. H. Yeats Museum.
Uh-huh. Okay, go ahead. And it literally is a historic homestead. And it's, like I said, it's the only one that is really available to the public. So there are tours, and they've been open for 20 years. What we need is more awareness. So at the time that I was in HBLI, I thought, what can I give to this project? If I could, I would fund, the restructure and stabilization.
Yeah, renovations, everything.
Yeah,
right?
Of course I would. But the bottom line is I don't have the money. So what can I do? And I thought, well, you know, you're supposed to use whatever talents you have in order to get
there. That's right.
I started literally that day. I started writing a play. I didn't know if it would ever see the light of day. But we are set to go into production June 16th through the 18th. The Ensemble Theater here in Houston, you know, after a couple of years of hard work, we are finally at the stages where we will see this play. It's entitled In All Thy Getting, The Forgotten Story of Freedman's Town. And what I
In All Thy Getting.
In All Thy Getting. It's from Proverbs 4:7. So in all the
June 16th through
the 18th. Yes, it's in alignment.
Ensemble Theater.
It's in alignment.
Okay, go ahead.
With it's in alignment with Juneteenth celebrations. We did that purposely. But we are just months away. We've been fundraising and making sure that we have the money to put on this play, and thank God people are responding and supporting this play. The Greater Houston Black Chamber is on board. 100 Black Men is on board. And
that's
a couple of other organizations are still finalizing agreements to sponsor and help us host this historic event. But what I did was similar to what I did with my own grandmother. I went and talked to people and I got stories, and then I created these fictional characters in the middle of history, so that learn, okay, what is so important? What the heck is so important about Freedman's Town? And as a matter of fact, what is Freedman's Town?
That's your current baby that you're working on.
That is my baby. I am just burping and just, you know, burping and pushing that baby right now.
Yeah. So when you say you don't have any children, I know of at least two that you have right now.
Yes. Those are my babies right now. And I'm really excited about what this means. Once again, you know, you can call yourself an author and you can put a bunch of titles to everything that you are.
Right.
But you want to be effective. And none of those titles, you're not worthy of being called a mother, a father, an author, a playwright. None of that is. You're not worthy of the title if it's just about you. I don't know if that makes sense, but
no, it does. PhD as well.
Yeah, it. I think
you got to earn it.
I think that when I go, I did a literary talk 2 days ago at Texas Southern University in collaboration with 100 Black Men, and they have a mentorship series, and they mentor the young boys. They mentor the parents. You know, who may also be suffering from these generational curses. And at the end of that time, there were women who walk up crying, and kind of giving their souls and saying that, I felt that. I need to have a conversation with my mother. Mm-hmm. If I'm not having that type of an impact, then I need to pack it up. Mm-hmm. When I start making it about Holly Charles having a book, when it becomes about me or how many books I sell, you know, because those things will come. Those things will come.
They will.
But when I start worrying about that, then I'm no longer effective and I no longer deserve the title. So it's the same thing with in all that getting.
Mm-hmm.
I am happy that the community will feel connected to this story and, mm-hmm. and will feel a sense of pride when they hear about, you know, when they hear about thousands of slaves being thrown into the Buffalo Bayou with malaria and alligators, and then
which is a body of water here in Richmond.
Yes, yes, and just saying, live.
Mm-hmm.
You're free, but you can't live with us. Mm-hmm. There you go. Take this marshland. So
yes,
I'm excited that they will. When I walked through Freedmanstown and I saw that, you know, the trolley marks, and I learned that they built their own hospital and that they had they had their own court system, you know, kind of makeshift court systems there. And I realized they built their own pharmacies, and I realized that they had their own school. When I went there and realized how self-sufficient these people were, it made me proud to be Black. So what I'm saying is this. I am happy, not so much for me, that the play is going to happen, because I didn't do the play for me.
No.
You know, I'm not.
This was your contribution.
This is a contribution. Every bit of the proceeds will go to the Rutherford B.H. Yeats Museum.
Mm-hmm. And that Freedmanstown Museum you mentioned.
Yes, in Freedmanstown. And the other historic homesteads that are endangered right now, the ones that we can save, that's where this money goes. And the last impact of the play is so that we have sustainable interest, because it makes no sense to have people donate once to a project, because next year we need more money to continue. So I wanted to create sustainable interest. I wanted people to say, oh, my God, how come I didn't know about this? Because that's how I felt. So I thought this play will garner more support for them. Yes, we'll have the funds that come in from the play and T-shirts and things like that. But then I want people to continue to patron. And that's what the play was about. Raise funds, but also raise awareness.
So let's just mention the name of the play one more time. And then also, you know, if people want to know more about the play and the effort for Freedmanstown, because, you know, we need to talk about, you mentioned the marsh. We need to talk about the bricks and some of the controversy here in Houston with that. They can go to the website for that museum and find out more information about your play and if they want to contribute and such.
Yes. So if you are interested in All Thy Getting, the forgotten story of Freedmanstown, one way, you know, crowdfunding is a great way. If you're interested in just donating simply to the cause, you can go to GoFundMe, just research in All Thy Getting, or Save Freedmanstown, and it will pop up for people to donate there. For a tax credit, and probably the more efficient way to donate to this project without any fees coming out of it, would be to go to www.rbhy.org. And that's just
one more time.
H-E-H-C-S. Yeah, so www.rbhy.org. And then you can just click on our page. There's a page there for An All By Getting. And there you'll see a link to an interview that I've done on Fox News about the project. You'll see the event details, and there'll be a place for you to donate directly to them and get a tax credit there.
Absolutely. So that's great work that, you know, I wanted to make sure I gave Holly an opportunity to mention some of the work she's doing here currently in the Houston area. And, you know, that's, you know, the play is getting a lot of buzz. If you're in Texas, no matter where you are in Texas, if you want to drive across the border and come in June, celebrate Juneteenth with us and come and see Holly's play, do so. And Holly, we have a national audience. We have an international audience. So hopefully you'll be getting some good feedback. And people want to donate, you know, any amount to help us remember our history.
Absolutely.
And if you've been listening to our podcast, you know, about Velvet, you can see the direct connections between Holly's writing in Velvet and her work with this play. You know, very similar type things. And again, the book we're talking about today, we've been talking about her play a little bit, but the book is Velvet. It's by Holly Charles. It's published by Author House. And, you know, Holly would love to talk with you. You can email her, contact her. She comes to your towns, as you can hear, and I can see, and then I've talked with her directly. She's very impassioned and serious about her work. She's a serious scholar, and this is meaningful. It's not about getting paid and getting money.
No.
You know, though we don't turn those down. But because we need funding to do our work as public scholars, academics, and, you know, and movers and shakers and people who are trying to have an impact in community. But, you know, it's more than that. You heard Holly mention she's not about titles. And, you know, I can tell you just in talking with her and having seen her in local news media, She's writer, producer, fundraiser, everything you can imagine she's doing with this play to help get it off the ground. And for those of you who are interested in entrepreneurial endeavors, I mean, she put this book together. She talking about Velvet. She did the work, the research. She did those things herself. So it's possible and achievable for everyone.
It is.
Don't let anyone tell you no. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to get it done, you got to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you all can hear Holly is very talented. You know, she's a great scholar. And this is only beginning. I've told Holly offline, are we going to get a sequel to Velvet?
I am wanting to write another book soon. Right now, I'm burping this baby right now.
So in the future, maybe.
Yeah. To get back to what you said about entrepreneurship. It's funny to hear that word because I don't necessarily consider myself an entrepreneur. I guess I always attach money to that, and that's not even on the radar for me.
We have to think differently, Holly.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I'm not against that. It's just that for me, this is a personal ministry for me. You know what I'm saying? Money,
it's a labor of love.
Yeah. So I was telling that group of women the other day because they were kind of looking like, well, how do you get to that point where, you know, how does all this happen in, you know, 3 or 4 years? And I said, you know, honestly, if I woke up 4 years ago and said, okay, I want to have a book and I want to do 5 engagements a month and I want to have a play and I want to have that ensemble. If I'd done all of that in one day, it would have been so intimidating that I would never start. Right. It's kind of like when you have those tours around the house where you got so much to do, so you do nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Like me today, but we won't talk about that, right?
It's MLK day, so we gonna relax, you know? But yeah, it's like where you have so much to do that you do absolutely nothing.
What I'm saying
is, start by doing what you can do in the next 15 minutes. We live in the information.
Great advice.
Half of what you need to do can be done on your own, and actually is better done on your own by just looking online. So people, you know, stop worrying about how hard it's going to be or where the money's going to come from. And stop that. Just do what you can do today. Do research.
Just do what you can do.
Do what you can
do. When you can do it.
Right. And that doesn't mean like in a lax way. Be intentional. Write it down. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying if you know that by the end of the week you can research at least 5 different websites concerning the you know, the endeavor you want, then do that. And then what happens is now you're sitting and looking at research. So now you're saying, okay, well, maybe I can make phone calls to everybody next week. Well, you know what? I had a meeting with someone. Well, you know what? I decided that I'm going to, you know, do a fundraiser. It's steps.
Mm-hmm.
So start
a little bit at a time.
Start worrying about what you can worry about today. And with a sincere heart, you know, be prayerful, of course, in all that you do. But with a sincere heart, look at what you can do now.
Mm-hmm.
And then
great advice.
Never stop. Yeah,
that's great advice. And so we're here with Holly Charles, the author of Velvet, on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. Holly, any last words you want to leave with the audience, or you know, or anything that you want to add, any other than go see your play, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, I know the majority of what we've been talking about today has been Velvet. It's
right.
The relationships between mothers and daughters. So as far as that is concerned, I will say this, the takeaway that I would hope every woman takes away from this today, a mother doesn't try to destroy her daughter any more than a daughter tries to disappoint her mother.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are just going to happen.
Okay.
That's life. That's marriage. That's every relationship that you will ever have.
Mm-hmm.
But you have responsibility to be compassionate to one another. And if anyone should be reminded of anything, it is of that.
Mm.
Now, as far as Velvet is concerned, as far as In All Thy Getting is concerned.
The play, right.
The play. That links back to Velvet because the title comes from Proverbs 4:7, and it says, in all thy getting, get an understanding.
Mm.
We are driven by money and power and status. But in all thy getting, the literal gettings, the physical and tangible gettings, get an understanding of who you are. So whether that be by reading Velvet and having a conversation with her, or actually doing research about ex-slave settlements that are right here in your own town.
Mm-hmm.
In all that getting, get an understanding so that you can understand how to move forward in a healthy and productive way. Mm-hmm. So that goes for mothers, that goes for Black people, that goes for human beings in general.
Yeah, all kinds of people.
Everyone. Right. And all that get an understanding.
Yeah. And, you know, and before we go, too, I just want to mention that as well. Velvet is your story. You're an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. But this is lots of people's stories. So if you're out there listening and you're thinking, well, that book is for Black folks, you know, for Black women or whatever, that's not true. This is for everyone. Everyone has their stories. Everyone has their generational curses that they're trying to overcome, or, you know, their ways that they're, you know, they can connect with their ancestors. So just, you know, just briefly, I don't want to keep you all day, Holly, but yeah, I mean, will you agree with me on that? Everyone can read your book. It's not just for African Americans.
Yes. Like I said, of course, a person who can identify more closely with what I'm talking about, with colorism and certain things, that of course, sure, there's a certain something that you pull out of it that's closer to what I feel. Of course.
Right.
But I have had white women in the back of the room sobbing. Mm-hmm. Because this is the thing, it wasn't necessarily that they felt a generational curse of colorism, but they have felt held back in some way.
Yes, universal.
I remember one of the most powerful things that ever happened to me was I went to Indiana University, and there was this older Black woman that was there, and I could tell, clearly, I thought I could tell something, and I didn't. But the way I read her expression was that she wasn't impressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people asked questions, and people cried. And she just looked like she was just kind of there,
mm-hmm.
just because, you know. And she thought, and she did the courteous thing, which is to come and buy a book from me at the end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't feel that she wanted to participate or that she got anything out of it. That was just the look I got. She bought a book, and I smiled, and I gave her my card, and, hey, contact me if you ever need me, and thank you for coming. And some months later, now this is a much older woman. I'm thinking she's probably the same age as my grandmother. A few months later, I get an email, kind of broken up, like you can tell she doesn't type very often. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But it was from that woman. And she said she'd read the book, and the gist of her email was that after reading the book, she said her mother had died, obviously, long ago, because she was a much older woman.
Sure.
She said her mother had died a long time ago, and her mother had treated her differently from her siblings because she was the darkest one.
Mm.
And even on her deathbed, she asked for those other children instead of the one that was sitting in front of her, which was her.
Oh.
And that hurt her, and it should have hurt her. And she said after reading the book that she got down on her knees and she asked God to forgive her for not trying to understand her mother.
Mm.
So even in death, and once again, I don't know if that was an admission of guilt, her saying, I did my mother wrong or my mother did me wrong. It wasn't about that. It's the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
She made peace with her mother years after she left. And I feel so blessed and honored to be able to say that me reading excerpts and me telling the truth helped her to find her.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the book is, because I didn't write anything that was self-help. But she identified with the characters, and she was able to go back and make that piece. That makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you do what you do.
That's what I do, and there's no dollar signs I can put on that. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I continue to do that. And I'm hoping to continue to have people with those aha moments, whether they're watching the play or reading the book.
Absolutely. And so we're here with Holly Charles, author of Velvet, Houston Area Scholar, historian, and author. And we're going to end it here, Holly, because it's MLK, and we got to go do our MLK thing.
Yes, we do.
But this was a nice part of MLK, and it connects to all human experience, the American experience and the African-American experience.
Yeah.
And so please check out Holly's work. Come see her play. In June here. What's the name of the play again, Holly?
In All Thy Getting, The Forgotten Story of Freedmanstown.
And it's going to be at the Ensemble Theater here in Houston. Fly in for it. Drive in for it. If you're local to Houston, you know you better come over here and see it. And you can talk to Holly there. And
you
she can come to your town as well. Yeah, so if you're local in Houston and they don't come, you're going to go get them, I think, right?
I'm knocking on doors. That's... I'm leaving today to start knocking on the doors.
Telling the story of Freedmanstown. which is that Midtown area of Houston.
And so
we're going to tell Holly goodbye. Holly, if you can say goodbye to my audience for me.
Thank you so much for listening. I pray you are moved by Velvet to do so.
Absolutely. So go pick up Velvet on Amazon. This is James Stancil, your host of the African American Studies Channel of the New Books Network. Thank you, author Holly Charles, author of Velvet, for being with us today. And we'll see everybody next time on the African American Studies Channel of the New Books Network. Take care. All right, we're back here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies Channel. We just finished up our interview with the author of Velvet, published by Author House, Holly Charles. I hope you enjoyed that interview. We learned a little bit about her and her methods. She's an educator here in the Houston area. And please look up the Yates Museum that she mentioned in her play that's going to be coming up in June. And she's more than willing and open to go out and do author talks, book talks, literary chats. She could come to a town near you. As you heard her there, she's very energetic, very passionate about her work, and she's a great interview. I love talking with her, and hopefully we can get her up here again for some of her future interviews or future work. That's all for us today on the African American Studies Channel of the New Books Network. I'm James Stancil, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Thank you.